Welcome back to another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today. Coming to you live from West Virginia University. It's a syndicated show that sits squarely at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and modern marketing practice. With your host, the host who seems to know the most about this topic here, Cindy Greenglass from WVU's DMC program. Hey, Cindy.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today?
I'm feeling a little under the weather. You know, it's rainy, and I'm getting over a cold, so I'm looking to get pepped up today here.
Well, I will be more than happy to oblige.
Well, I'll tell you your title. They always put show titles in the notes here, and some of them, you know, I have to just smile when I read them. And this one was one of those that I got a kick out of. So I have to read it here today for everybody here to see if you guys can explain it in greater detail. The title of the program says Moneyball for Brands Meets Esports. Wow, Moneyball for Brands Meets Esports. You really going to cover all that today?
You know, it's half an hour, and we're barely going to scratch the surface, but this is a really exciting topic, and we have an amazing guest.
All right, well, I'll let you launch into it here and start taking notes.
Thanks, Paul. You know, this is the confluence of two or three trends that we have seen. And, you know, first we saw CPGs take on data and data insights to determine better consumer behavior trends. And then in sports, you know, if those of you saw the movie Moneyball, you saw the use of data and analytics being brought into the sports environment to enhance performance. And then we know there are millions and millions of individuals who have absorbed and embraced gaming, and gaming has come out of the basements and has taken over as a cultural tsunami. It is now more than just entertainment. It is now a big business, and there's no going back. We have the great opportunity to speak with Johannes Waldstein today, who comes to us live from the NBA event, the All-Star event that'll start this weekend. And welcome, Johannes. He is the founder and CEO of FanAI. It's a leading esports audience monetization platform. That's a mouthful, and he's going to tell us a lot about this. But they increase franchise and sponsorship revenues by analyzing in-depth audience data. And this enables brands to gain a much fuller picture of the esports target audience. And Johannes, you know, started on what I would call our traditional CPG side of the business. He was a product manager at dunnhumby, the world's largest loyalty data science company. He's built data platforms. He's a lifelong fan of competitive sports and esports. And Johannes, I want to welcome you into our show today.
Thank you so much, Cindy. Really look forward to it.
Well, I'm going to jump right in because we got a lot to cover. And for those of us who are not that familiar with the space, I'm going to ask you to give us a quick overview of the fundamentals of the esports ecosystem. Tell us what this is all about.
Absolutely. So this is something that's been huge in South Korea and China for more than 10, 15 years, of people not just playing video games, but playing video games competitively. And then not just playing video games competitively, but turning it into a sport. So having a venue where people watch it, people streaming and watching it online. And over the last two or three years, it's become more and more mainstream, partially driven by the fame of Ninja and by Fortnite as a phenomenon that a lot of parents know about their children playing, but also driven by EA with Madden or NBA 2K, where they'll have NBA players like Shaquille O'Neal playing video games competitively this weekend, through to games like Riot League of Legends that have tournaments, Call of Duty, Overwatch League are some of the really big games that now have a competitive ecosystem where they will fill a Madison Square Garden stadium, or they will fill the Oakland Arena in Oakland, of people cheering for their team, watching other people play video games. And that's some of the excitement that's now being brought to video games through esports.
So this is really an eye-opening conversation. Whenever I talk about esports with my peers or traditional marketers, there's always this wow moment where they said, really, like, there's money here. This is like, they can't embrace the size of how this has grown. And so, you know, when we say competitive gaming, you're watching professional gamers play, or you're watching celebrities gaming, and you're participating in this. Why is this the next frontier for brands? Where's that opportunity, as opposed to just saying it's entertainment?
So maybe you start with some of the blockers to those brands reaching millennials. They're blocking ads more and more. They're on mobile first. They're not even cord cutters because they never had a cord. So they're watching subscription services. They're watching content on Twitch. So how do these big brands reach people that traditionally they would have targeted somewhere on the internet, but they're now ad blocking, or done television commercials, but they're not watching television? So what do you do with this next generation of people who are consuming content in snackable, bite-sized contents, who love user-generated content, who love influencers? How do you reach them? So maybe you reach them through Instagram, maybe you reach them through influencers. They're not on Facebook very much, so they're not going to be in the Facebook stream. So how do you get to them? What are they doing? And it turns out that a lot of their time is spent in playing games. A lot of their time is spent in watching people play games or compete in games or stream things. So in order for the brands to reach authentically to that audience, being able to be either in the game or in the stream or in the broadcast in a way that can't be blocked, in a way that adds value to the community, ties those audience members to that brand and helps them build the type of loyalty that those brands really want from that audience.
So, Johannes, for brands to be authentic in this environment, do they have to project in a different way than they would in a traditional media environment? Is this more of the same, where you have commercials or you have that sort of content? Or do they have to reinvent themselves because this is an entirely different audience with a requirement for a very different engagement with the brand?
I think that depends. I think a brand being true to itself is more important than putting on a different face or than putting on something else. It's the people are quite intelligent, so they can see if people are faking it or if it's being forced. I think being willing to have a sense of humor, being willing to be a little bit self-deprecating, to make fun of the brand a little bit and not too serious is necessary. But we've seen big brands like Mercedes jump in, and you wouldn't really have thought that a Mercedes brand and gaming would go well together. But they sponsored ESL, one of the biggest tournament organizers. They let each of the teams customize and put kind of a plastic wrap around the car to make it look like the team car. They made fun of themselves a little bit with memes. So little internet sayings and things that made fun of themselves, and it landed really, really well. There are other examples like American Express trying to sponsor events, and it fell flat. The response was, this is my dad's credit card. Why would I pay to have a credit card when I can get so many better ones that are free? Oh, by the way, this is not even a credit card. I have to fully pay it down at the end of every month. So I have to pay for it, and I have to pay it fully back every month. Why would I use, you know, an American Express? So it has to be a product that fits with that demographic, and you don't have to pretend to be something else. The brand has to be itself, but it has to have value for that audience.
That's great. Thank you. I'd like to pivot a little bit and start talking about data, because, you know, we are at the confluence of marketing and data. And we like to say that everything starts and ends with data. And if I were to say that to you in your environment, what does that mean to you? And how would you interpret that in your world?
Absolutely. So So when you think about AI and you think about the power of algorithms, the most important thing for me is that there's no way to return an authentic relationship back to a fan or back to an individual without algorithms. Cindy, you and I can have rapport. I can understand what you're doing. I can respond to you. There's no way to do that at scale across millions or tens of millions or hundreds of millions of people without machine learning or with deep learning, because you can't pattern match. You can't take a sample and then understand how to react to everybody. So the demand of the individual is now that a Netflix or an Amazon or a Google is personalized to you, that it knows what you want and therefore provides you a much better service. So when you say that data is the beginning, it's really the only way that at massive scale, a really personalized and interesting experience can be served up to you. And that leads to some of the difficulties. There's so much data that unless you start with the goal, unless you have a really clear vision of where you want to go, it's very hard to know where to begin, because the algorithm won't tell you where to begin. You have to have a business outcome in mind or something good for the consumer. So an example might be, how do I find the most relevant next game for this person to play, given all of their history? That might be a really valuable insight, both for the individual and for the business. Just looking at the consumer data doesn't really get you there. So I think the ability at massive scale to personalize and give great experiences and to start with either the business objective or with the consumer good that you're trying to reach really puts machine learning and deep learning in its place, which is it's serving the good of that individual, or it's serving a business outcome that provides business value.
I get it. So like everything, you start with the business objective, and this is no different. What are we trying to achieve? What is the purpose? What do we want the audience or our target audience to feel or to do, right? You start with the outcome and work your way backwards, right?
Exactly. And to not be afraid of using different techniques or throwing one algorithm out or testing and learning. So the ability to iterate quickly and to learn fast is incredibly important. And unlike solving medicine or solving DNA, where you have to be almost 100% right, in marketing, it's much more about, are the outcomes getting better? Are things improving? And so instead of looking at it in an academic way, looking at it really that these are tools for us. And if this specific neural network is not working, or this particular Boolean algorithm is not working well, that's fine. Try something else. Iterate. But the way you're measuring it is you're trying to measure it against business value, or you're trying to measure it against customer experience or the end fan experience. Not, is my algorithm better? Is my algorithm smarter? Those are always serving a greater purpose.
Terrific. We're going to break in a minute here, but Johannes, I want you to think about this while we're on break. I'd like you to think of an example, maybe, when we come back to say how this iterative process has worked. Maybe you can give us an example. Oftentimes, marketers, you know, we talk about tests, you talk about multiple ways to do testing. Usually it's kind of like A-B testing, or it's pretty linear testing. Machine learning, AI, this sounds like it's kind of multi-dimensional testing, that this iterative approach. And I'd like you to be able to share maybe a brief example to put this into context with us when we get back.
Happy to.
Great. Okay, Paul, we're going to turn it over to you for a minute.
Well, while they're formulating those answers, we want you to ponder this, that West Virginia University has the only online data marketing communications program in the country. It's the first graduate program of its kind. Focusing on strategic thinking, critical problem solving, and informed decision making, this data marketing communication program prepares you for your career by learning these innovative tactics like the ones we're talking about today from award-winning faculty and internationally known thought leaders like our guest today. You can learn all about this innovative program at DMC for Data Marketing Communications, dmc.wvu for West Virginia University, dmc.wvu.edu. Check it out today. I tried to get through that as quick as I could because this is just fascinating stuff here. How big is the esports market going to be? It still blows my mind that people will pay to watch a kid play a video game, but my son-in-law does and my grandson does. I mean, they just are into this thing in such a bit. And they're forming leagues out here in Southern California because we're the home of Blizzard and all these other big gaming. I'd love to know, before you jump into all the iterative discussions here, how big is esports going to be?
Johannes, you want to try and give us some scale?
Yeah, sorry. It cut out there for a second. Can you ask that again?
How big is esports going to become? Is this really, I mean, I know they're thinking this is the next NFL or something really big. Is it that big or is it just a niche?
Well, I mean, imagine how many people are playing video games. To give you an idea of the scale, a new game launched about 2 weeks ago, Apex Legends, which is a little bit like Fortnite. Within 10 days, more than 25 million people are playing the game, with more than 2 million people playing it at the same time. That's the amount of people that are playing the game. And then you have similar numbers who are watching other people play the game. So Twitch is the biggest streaming platform of live people streaming and playing video games. And they have between 100 and 200 million people a month watching that worldwide. So huge, huge numbers across all of those games. So it really is very, very big. And if you look at what are children doing with their time after school, a lot of that is playing video games. They have friendships now. They're on Discord, which is a messaging platform that you can speak to people or message people while you play. And you might be friends with somebody on the other side of the world. You might be friends with somebody at your own school. High schools are now starting to have gaming programs. There's already varsity esports, so varsity competitive video gaming at a university level, with hundreds of colleges now providing that and also providing scholarships. It really is very, very big, and it's hard to see that going away.
Well, I don't know whether you know, but Cindy's actually the faculty advisor for the new gaming program for the gaming team at WVU here. She's training them right now here.
Well, awesome. Truth be told, I got so excited about this because, you know, my son is an avid gamer, and he's also in the gaming ecosystem and business, and that's what first turned me onto it. And as a lover of data and looking at consumer trends, I said, you know, this is just fascinating, and we all have to get on board with it. And so, Johannes, give us an example here. We talked right before break about iteration and how we had to be iterative. It's not test control. It's iterate, iterate, iterate for constant process improvement. Share with us an example.
Absolutely. So one of the things that both machine learning and deep learning are really, really good at is finding patterns. And so you find lots and lots of patterns in the data, but you're not always sure what's cause and what's effect and what causes what. So a lot of the iterating is running tests to see, okay, my assumption is that older audience members are going to react more like this, and younger audience members are going to react more like this. Or there's an assumption that says gender will make this sort of difference in the behavior or not make this sort of difference in the behavior. And so you are constantly trying to run tests to validate, is this causing this other thing, or is my assumption correct or not correct? And one of the great things, that advantages that we have at FanAI, is we have a data set of over 50 million gamers where we have first party data, and we're able to enrich that with a bunch of streaming data, a bunch of social data, a bunch of purchase behavior data. And we're also able to see attribution data on the other side. So how do a cohort of people spend offline or online? So there are lots of algorithms that cluster what we think will happen. And then you're able to run tests to see, are they correlated? Is one causing the other? Or does it just happen to be a pattern for some other reason that we might not know?
you brought up something really important we wrestle with today, and that is the, you know, some could say this is the, you know, the Holy Grail, and that's attribution. In our multi-channel, omni-channel environment where the consumer is on the go and everywhere, and us as marketers are constantly being pressured for ROI and to determine which KPIs are working and where you put your spend, where you pivot your spend, attribution becomes really hard. Even in traditional marketing channels, attribution becomes really hard, right? Who do I give the credit to? You know, you got $100 million marketing spend with a big CPG. Do I put more money in the Super Bowl? Do I put more money in my retail and my brick and mortar? Do I put money into this? Is it possible to actually do attribution for a brand to figure out what this new emerging channel can provide from a KPI standpoint? Loaded question, I know.
Yeah, it's a loaded question, and it's unfortunately more complicated than just yes and no. Attribution is always hard. It's really, really hard. Even at Dunnhumby, where we had all of the point of sale data, it was hard to say what caused you to add that to your basket or what caused you to change your purchase behavior. So it's really, really hard to see what the cause is. But we have a great advantage of having two sides of it. We have a huge amount of first party data, and so we can see a lot of the history and benchmark where that is. And we have partnerships with the large purchase providers like the MasterCards and the First Datas. So we can see what's going on at the retailer level. So at a merchant level, we can see, are those people spending and were they touched by that retailer? For an individual product, it's much more difficult because that's inside the merchant. So I would say at a merchant level, we have a pretty good idea of what's driving, what are some of the things in gaming and esports that are driving them to buy online or offline at a merchant level. At a product level, that's a lot more difficult. You can proxy it by saying, is there spend changing at the retailers that most sell for them? But it could be buying a competitor's product because most of the retailers that sell a Unilever product are selling a P&G product. So I would say where you have first party data and where you have the payment partnerships, you can do it at a retailer level. Unless you're a Dunnhumby or you have all of the point of sale data or your Amazon, which has about 50%, between 40 and 50% of the e-commerce market in the US, it's very hard to do it at a product level.
So in the last couple of minutes that we have together, if I were representing a brand and I listened to this podcast and I said, wow, I would really like to learn more. I'd like to educate myself on how I might be able to dip my toe in the water. What would be your advice on how somebody could start, get their feet wet in this?
Most of those big brands will have agencies. I mean, we have an investment from WPP and Group M, and they have a lot of agencies within them. So one of the first things is to go to their agency and say, look, I want to take a look at gaming. I want to take a look at esports. That's both on the media buying side and on kind of the sponsorship, on the sponsorship side of the business. So they're both opportunities to do media buys and sponsor. And then if they want more analytics or if their agency wants more analytics, there are two or three businesses that are big in the space. We, at the moment, are the market leaders, and we would love them to talk to us. Nielsen Esports, with a long background in television, is now starting to do things in esports as well. So I would say first they should talk to their agency, and then they should talk to specialists in the space.
So at the end of this program, are you okay if people reached out to you on LinkedIn, contacted you, and could engage with you further?
Absolutely. More than happy to have myself or somebody in my team help anybody that has questions.
That's great. Well, I did say at the top of the show here that you are going to be at the NBA All-Star game out there in Charlotte, it's a whole weekend of fun and activity. So just to close this out, you said that you're going to have some of the actual players are going to engage in playing some video games or competitive gaming?
Absolutely. So we work with Turner E-League, who are Turner's one of the real pioneers in broadcasting competitive esports. And they're broadcasting NBA 2K, which is a basketball video game. And they have some of the great legends like Shaquille O'Neal, who are going to come out and challenge people to play video game basketball. And it's going to be a great event on Saturday. It's going to be streamed. And it's going to be on, I believe, TBS from Turner and on Twitch. And should be really fascinating to watch the smackdown between great basketball legends playing video games and talking smack.
That's amazing. This is very exciting. And I hope you'll have a great time. I'm sure you'll be getting some great photos, and you'll be sharing them with us and your fans. And thank you, Johannes, for taking the time out of your busy day and event schedule to share this important time with us. So appreciate it very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much, Cindy.
What an amazing example of what we talk about each and every issue of WVU Marketing Communications Today. Right here in the Funnel Radio channel for at-work listeners like you.